Good evening. My name is Herb, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to our 12 Traditions Workshop. Please join me in the prayer for an open mind. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions in you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and especially you. This is the foreword to the pamphlet, AA Tradition, How It Developed by Bill Wilson, published in 1955. How shall we AAs best preserve our unity? When an alcoholic applies the 12 steps of our recovery program to his personal life, his disintegration stops and his unification begins. The power which now holds him together in one piece overcomes those forces which had rent him apart. Exactly the same principle applies to each AA group and to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So long as the ties which bind us together prove far stronger than those forces which would divide us if they could, all will be well. We shall be secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty. May we never forget that without permanent unity, we can offer little lasting relief to those scores of thousands yet to join us in their quest for freedom. It is the purpose of this workshop to review and discuss each of the 12 traditions so we may better understand and apply them to our fellowship and also to our personal lives. Please join me in a few minutes of meditation on that purpose, on that intent. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We are here to talk about our second legacy, unity. And to review the 12 traditions, crosstalk is allowed in a loving and supportive manner. To be informed and helpful are our only goals. So, I can't tell you how beneficial this workshop process has been for me, renewing my information, certainly, but renewing my spirit about the 12 traditions and the spiritual principles that they represent. And so I have some notes from my preparation, some things that just came to me, or some things that I read and thought that they would be useful as sort of setting up a context for tonight's fifth tradition. And the short form of the tradition is each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. The long form, which I've read many times and I've heard many times and I've studied many times, it just popped for me this time because it says each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity. I hope you hear that. The group is a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. So I looked up the word purpose. That was one of the assignments, and I thought it would be good to capture that now. We'll visit it again as part of the questions. Purpose, the end for which an effort is expended. What outcome do we want from the activities that we're going to employ, the resources that we're going to use? What is the outcome that we want? And it's a wonderful way to plan your day, certainly, but probably your life. What outcome do you want? In terms of spiritual entity, if in fact a group is a spiritual entity, then perhaps, play with this, it has a spiritual message, really. Most of the meetings, but some of them. And then we've compared, all along we've compared the steps to the traditions and sometimes even the specific step to the corresponding tradition. The literature I'm reading seems to do that. Sometimes it's a little bit of a stretch, but it's always thought-provoking. The fifth step reveals the exact nature of our wrongs, and the fifth tradition reveals the exact nature of our purpose. Perhaps our talents reveal our vocation and purpose. Who we are is our destiny. Our talents reveal the message that we are, in fact, communicating, or are invited, challenged to communicate. Our talents indicate the intended audience. I think that's really clear when we talk about one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. Our talent as having recovered makes us uniquely equipped to talk to another alcoholic and be able to have some identification. And of course, I've given out a distribution thing that had what we are invited to sacrifice with each of the traditions and take actions on. So are we invited to sacrifice our complacency for compassion? Complacency for compassion? And are we more inclined to receive comfort rather than give comfort, along the spirit of the St. Francis prayer? In meditation some time ago, a phrase came to me when I was thinking about a particular aspect of the book that I was writing, my second book, and I actually have this phrase in there. The inclination is the invitation. Think about that. The inclination that you have as a person may be the invitation for your vocare to be called, your vocation, or at least your avocare, your hobby, your passion. And then, given that this is the primary purpose, to carry the message, perhaps our responsibility is to have a message. No. Actually, as I'm thinking about it, we have a message. Every one of us has a message, and we communicate it. Are you happy with the message that you are communicating? Yeah, really, huh? Think about it. In a different context, I said we're all contagious. Yeah. Invited to have a message, invited to carry a message, and in the spirit again of St. Francis, invited to be a message. So just some thoughts for us to start. And let's go to the assignment. We'll take a look at Bill's Language of the Heart. Oh, by the way, we have now a nice supply of Language of the Heart. If you don't have it, I encourage you to have it, not only for the workshop. I was asked prior to this workshop, would it be a book that we should have even if we beyond the workshop? And clearly I said, of course, but the reason I said is because it's General Service Office literature. And I personally believe that if our General Service, that's worldwide General Service Office, decides to put something together and in print, and they take the time and our resources to do that, it's probably a good idea that we be at least familiar with it. And so actually, based on this workshop and that thought, I'm recommitting to read in the next 3 months, those three books, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, AA Comes of Age, and Language of the Heart, because I know it will recenter me in our history so that we can start out the new workshop with a renewed vigor about some of our history and maybe even remember some of it. All right, so page 82 is tradition 5. And you know the drill. We look at each page. There are 2 pages here, half a page apiece. And we take a look at it and ask, are there any highlights on that page or any questions or any experiences that anybody would like to share with what that page stimulates? George. and George is in compliance. Thank you.
Trying to set an example. The second paragraph says a tremendous responsibility has descended upon us all, an obligation so great that it amounts to a sacred trust, and that's to help the suffering alcoholic, you know, to carry the message, which it describes further on.
Yeah. It's a sacred trust because it says it's a life and death errand, this recovery process. It's not about quality of life. It's a, although it is, of course, but fundamentally it's about life itself. We dare not, he says. We cannot. We dare not. I mean, I've never heard Bill so directive, so single-minded here. We cannot, we dare not ever be diverted from our primary purpose. I love the line in the first paragraph, which reflects some of the information that we got last time in the fourth tradition, where it said, the good may be the enemy of the best. And this says, did you just turn it down? I don't know. Is that still working all right? Okay. To do one thing supremely well, than many things badly. In other words, there's only so much time and energy. And if we try to do too much, we don't do anything as deeply or as well as we possibly could. Now, maybe that's just the outcome that you want. I work with somebody who said 80% of getting the details right is good enough for him. Makes me shudder. But he really meant it. I mean, he's a senior person in the organization. And for him, details were just not that important as long as the big picture. And so, you know, I honor that. It's not a way I could function. I pay attention to 100% detail. I may not get it 100%, but that's what I pay attention to. All right. Please, Alex. If you think you're going to raise your hand, it might be good to kind of like get up and go for it. There we go. Nobody can run like you, though, right?
When you were just mentioning that details and... I was surprised to find out that I was a perfectionist because my house was a mess and everything was kind of chaotic. I was late for things. And then it turned out that the reason why my house was a mess is because I get so perfectionistic and so caught in all the details that I'd never finish anything because I'd get distracted. So I had to learn a saying, which was, it's better to do, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing wrong, which is...
If it's worth doing, it's worth doing wrong.
Which
All right.
is counterintuitive for me.
Yep.
But it's been helping in my recovery to take it one piece at a time and not to do everything perfectly, but do the very best in that moment.
Yeah.
So anyways, it was just...
Well, it's like Mark Twain said, I never learn from mistakes I never made. So it's the same kind of thing. And perfectionism will create paralysis because you want to do it perfectly. You know you can't, so why start? Yeah. All right. Please, Dave.
Yeah, Dave, addict. And in my business, we have a lot of design reviews. And during the design reviews, we say we're 50% of the way done. We're 70% of the way done. We're 90% of the way done. And we never say that we're 100% of the way done because even 10 minutes before launch, we were still fussing with some of the details, software or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and that's the same if anybody's a writer here. You'll write something and you'll be really happy with it. You'll go back tomorrow and you'll start changing it. All right. And then you'll go back the next day. You'll start changing it again. Because every time you get a little bit of an insight or a little bit of a, or your mood changes.
Yeah, ours are even predefined. At preliminary design review, we expect we're only going to be 50% of the way done.
Yeah, okay. Sounds rigorous.
Tom, alcoholic.
Hi, Tom.
I hate to interject, but I have a bone to pick with this concept that we
Which concept?
About. This idea of perfectionism, and I think a lot of us are confused between being neurotic and having a neurosis and being completely focused to the point of being mentally ill.
We
confuse that somehow with this notion of being perfectionist. I think it's interesting, your colleague that had the 80% rule, his theory was probably, if you focus on 100%, you're never going to get anything done.
I just so don't agree with that.
Well, I
focus on getting 100% correct, and I get a lot done. Now, I'm at the 98% level, but my work is really good.
Oh, and I bet. And you're an exceptional man, Herb. Absolutely. But I think for the rest of
us... Yeah, but this other guy owns the company. Right. So, I mean, really. And if he's happy with that,
And he's getting a lot done, apparently.
Yeah.
But I think for us plebeians down here, us bottom feeders, I think it's unhealthy to somehow prance around thinking that I'm a perfectionist.
No.
When in reality, I'm so neurotic and so sick and so bent and twisted that my life is chaos and a complete utter wreck.
Yeah.
And I go to AA meetings and profess how aren't we all perfectionists? I think that's a really dangerous, twisted, warped point of view.
Yeah.
And like I said, when I got up here, I have a bone, an axe to grind.
Well, you obviously have a strong feeling about this, verging on a resentment. So you have some work to do. That's all, Tom. It's wonderful. We discover new things. But I actually agree that perfectionism is not something to be achieved. It is, in fact, a declaration that I'm neurotic. I actually agree that anybody who says that I'm a perfectionist and really means it, if they really understand what that means and means it, probably that they're not balanced. They're compulsive, obsessive in some fashion, and they probably need to do some work with it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What?
I agree.
So, page 83, do we have any highlights on that?
Hi, I'm Anastasia.
Hi, Anastasia.
Alan on. So, on page 83 of this subtle vintage, so it's, you know, building up, so I'm just kind of going right to it, but of this subtle vintage, may we never drink too deeply. May we never forget that we live by the grace of God on borrowed time, that anonymity is better than acclaim, that for us as a movement, poverty is better than wealth.
Yeah.
I think it's profound. And the page prior to that, I think that goes in conjunction, is this whole idea of, should our present success continue? I like that I use the word should.
Yeah.
It's because it's possible that it won't.
Yeah.
And it can't.
Very humble.
If we actually don't stay present to this idea of, you know, mastering the purpose of our own recovery, as well as to demonstrate and look for the opportunity of service as an attraction versus a promotion. And should we actually be successful in that, the humility that comes with it, the responsibility that comes with it, I just found it very profound how he languaged it on page 83 is this of the borrowed time and that we're living by grace. So we're certainly not doing it on our own.
Right.
And that, it is subtle that the whole process of recovery, because at any given point, as we talk about in our character defects, you know, it's not if it shows up, it's when it shows up. And, and that's the vigilance in which I think the responsibility of this tradition is talking about.
Yeah, we live by the grace of God. Anonymity is better than acclaim. He practiced that. And you read his history, you know that he really shunned the kind of national, international recognition that he was offered. And he turned it down. And then one of the brilliance of the movement was its commitment to poverty, all right? Meaning that as an individual, you can't contribute to AA unless you're an alcoholic, and you can't contribute any more than $3,000 a year. And they have, in fact, had wills read that have bequeathed to them anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million from the will, and they had to send the check back because they don't receive money except from individuals who are alcoholic and no more than $3,000 a year. Because they know that money would corrupt the deal. All right? Yeah. And that was the insight that Rockefeller had way back when Bill was thinking he was going to get all that thousands of dollars from the dinner of the gathering of the millionaires that Rockefeller put together. And Rockefeller ended the dinner by saying, oh, by the way, boys, put away your checkbooks. Money's going to spoil this thing. Bill just got real depressed. A primary spiritual aim. Oh, hi, Tommy. I didn't see it. Sorry.
No. It's very interesting. I heard a talk that Bill gave in 1954 in Texas the other day, and he talked about that experience with the Rockefellers, and apparently over about a five-year period, they did end up receiving about $15,000.
Maybe even more, but
they got doled, and Rockefeller actually sat down and wrote letters to all the bankers who attended one of those particular functions where he was so poignant and talking about how many money might spoil his thing. And he actually took time out of his busy entrepreneurial life and wrote personal letters to all these bankers who sent, you know, small sums for...
Well, he said in the letter that he was going to contribute $5,000.
That's right.
And so Bill knew that if the people who were getting the letter saw that Rockefeller was going to contribute $5,000 with his billions, they only had to give 50.
That's right.
But
it's interesting because he had the foresight to see that this movement could die on the vine.
Yeah.
And he breathed just enough life into it to keep it moving.
Yeah.
But he did put a few bucks forth. But more importantly, I think he gave of himself in order in arranging these meetings. There were several meetings, and he wrote the letters, and he was really personally involved and really put himself out there to help alcoholics.
Well, and as Paul Harvey would say, and the rest of the story, Bill and Bob kept exact records of the money they received from the Rockefellers and the other people and returned it once the proceeds of the book began to come in. And they paid back all the debt, all the money that they had been given by non-alcoholics. Pretty impressive. Primary spiritual aim of AA, carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers alcoholism. I want to go back to the comments about neurotic, lest we leave that hanging the way I think it was left hanging. You know, it's on a scale of 1 to 10. And I've mentioned to you in my prior workshop that as a recovering narcissist, I was originally deemed by my psychologist an 8 on a scale of 1 to 10, 25, 30 years ago. And his comment was, the people who are 10 are in prison. All right? Yeah. So he was trying to get my attention, which he did. But recently, a couple years ago, I asked him, Dr. Alan Berger, so what does it look like now? And he said, probably 2, 2.5, 3. So there's been an incredible improvement, but not a full recovery. All right? And so that narcissism is it's a DSM label. All right? It's definitely more, maybe even more than neurotic. But there is mental illness in, I believe, all people, and a certain amount of neurosis in all people, but it would be like a scalable 1 to 10 type thing in terms of severity. All right? So I just needed to clear that up in case anybody was feeling bad about maybe being neurotic. Neurotics Anonymous is us, right? All right. So the 12 and 12. Tradition 5 in the 12 and 12 starts on page 150. There are four pages. Let's take a look at the first page. Anybody want to comment on highlights on the first page? Uh, Well, the only highlight I have is that, again, shoemaker, stick to thy last. You know, what that? Oh, Jason, did you want to make comment about what I'm making comment on?
Yeah, I just.
Well, then go ahead.
It's just a question. Oh. Jason Alcoholic.
Hello, Jason.
I don't know what the heck that means.
Well, that's what I was going to just, yeah. All right. So he's saying, this is a kind of a quote from his times using the language that was prevalent in a day where there were people who were masters at different technical skills, and they had apprentices that the master would train. And so this is a shoemaker, kind of one of the wisdom sayings.
A last is something like the foot made of wood that they form the shoe around.
Right. So in the shoemaker of old, and we have one in our neighborhood, actually. He's from the old country, whatever country that is. And he has he's created this magnificent place where he does absolutely fabulous work in terms of making shoes or repairing shoes. But he has a last, which is, as we pointed out, that it is something that fits into the shoe that they can then work on. Please, Justin.
Justin Alcoholic. You know, I read this this weekend, and then I started thinking, like, this is the heart of the matter. He stuck it in the middle because it was so important, you know, that this is really what AA is all about.
Yeah.
And the only thing it's all about. It's not about anything but helping others.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I agree. It's the 12th step, isn't it? Having had a spiritual awakening, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. In the step workshop, I challenged us to answer, so what's the message I'm going to ask you here? He says each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. So what is the message of the group? That's not a question necessarily, but because you had something else to come up with.
George Barrett, the message of the group is that we have an answer to alcoholism. We have a solution. That's the message.
That's right.
But what I'm commenting on here is not anything specific, but Bill is just very powerful here in saying how important it is, how much of a mission it must be for us to help others, to give them the benefit of our experience in recovery, and that it's just absolutely necessary. He's very powerful in how he expresses this, you know, with the analogy to doctors, who are one of the most highly regarded groups in society, presumably.
Yeah. Well, in fact, listen to the language that he uses. Just as firmly bound by obligation are the members of Alcoholics Anonymous who have demonstrated that they can help problem drinkers as others seldom can. I mean, that's as much of a directive as I've seen Bill give, where he's usually much softer than that. And George pointed out, in terms of the answer to the question, that the group's message is that we literally have a way out from the problem. All right? We have a solution to your problem. In the same way, the steps indicate that the message, I believe, in the 12th step is a spiritual awakening. The message of the group is much broader. It's like, we have a solution to the problem of your drinking. It happens to be a spiritual awakening, which means that you find God, but they don't even get to that level. They're just saying, we have a way out from the problem and the misery. You don't necessarily know what we have, and therefore you don't know whether you want it or not. What you're very convinced of when you're first in coming to a meeting is that you don't want what you have. That's why you're there. All right. The next page, 151. Anybody have any highlights or comments on that page?
Hi, Kim Al-Anon.
Hi, Kim.
There is another reason for the singleness of purpose. It is the great paradox of AA that we know we can seldom keep the precious gift of sobriety unless we give it away. I've been having such an experience with these traditions, and actually it's the experience of really working the steps. Until I work the steps in myself, I can't really have that primary purpose. I have to get out of myself first, and I've been having that experience. But in Al-Anon, you know, our primary purpose is that we help families of alcoholics.
Okay.
And so I had this experience the other day, and what it does for me is after a meeting, there was a woman who didn't get to share. And so I went over to her, and I said, "Do you want to share?" And she said, "Yes." And so she shared, and I felt her pain as I was the newcomer, too. And I felt in that moment my primary purpose was just to listen to her, just to let her say it out loud and to listen to her,
right.
You know, and not, you know, watch myself in my defects of let me say the right thing,
sure.
Let me enable, let me pick a slogan, let me feel good about making you feel good, you know, and it was just, I just sat there in the moment, I was having my own 12-step experience, but I was listening to her and she was just in a lot of pain,
sure.
But it is that mirror image, because when I greet someone who's in pain, that's who I used to be. So I can go right back to that day. And so it is that kind of unification of that experience of sharing our experience, strength, and hope. And the primary purpose is really helping me, because there's really nothing for me to do except share my experience, strength, and hope.
Yeah.
That's what
And share it in that case by just listening. All right. And, you know, we're really good animals. At the basic level, human beings are really good animals. And they have a sense when you're listening. And they have a sense when you're listening from your experience. All right? And I'm reading some material now on attachment theory in psychotherapy. It's amazing, all right, the kind of research that's been done about our ability to perceive in an unconscious way all the stimuli around us that's not verbal, that's not conscious, that's just, we're just receiving the message at a cellular level. And this is research now, and it's actually really startling. It's motivated me now to know more about what goes on in the brain, actually. So you'll be getting more of that next year. The only thing that matters is that he is an alcoholic who has found a key to sobriety. And then he says, these legacies of suffering and recovery. Legacies of suffering and recovery. Very few people find a spiritual life unless they have, in fact, had some type of suffering and they're looking for a solution. Please.
Bonnie, alcoholic. I was going to tie the last reading along with this one. In the center of the grapevine reading, it talks about our singleness and purpose, and that eventually society will think us able to cure the world.
Oh, yes.
And in here it talks then more singly about the alcoholic. To the newcomer, in no way depends upon his learning, his eloquence, or any special individual skill. The only thing that matters is that he is an alcoholic and has found a key to sobriety. And in maintaining that primary purpose and trying to make sure that others are able to relate to people with similar problems, a lot of other 12-step programs have come up. And I'm finding that in Alcoholics Anonymous, there isn't always that singleness of purpose. If I go to an Al-Anon meeting, I can't say that I'm an alcoholic. If I go to an NA meeting, I can't say that I'm an alcoholic. But many people come into AA and bring all their other issues.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a watering down of that singleness of purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple, what do they call them, circuit speakers. I've heard talk about there is no alcoholic and addict. Alcoholic and food addict. Alcoholic and sex addict. Your point is that I'm an alcoholic. If I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm an alcoholic. I spent 6 months with the Al-Anons when I was about 10 years because I knew I needed some more information and some of that wisdom that they had. And right away, when I went in the meeting, because it was a local meeting and they knew who I was, they made it really clear, you know, you don't talk about your alcoholism or that fellowship, all right, as your point is. And at first I thought, don't you know who I am? And actually they did know who I was. That's why they warned me. So, but your point is so valid in terms of potentially watering it down. You can believe anything that you want and you can say about yourself anything that you want, but respect the culture and the traditions of the meeting. Please.
I'm Sarah and I'm a food addict.
Hi, Sarah.
And I could use a little bit of help about that because it seems to me that that's putting an awful lot of emphasis on the substance.
Yes, it is.
Rather than on the disease. That we have a common disease.
Do we?
Well, if cravings, I mean, I think a lot of the 12-step programs are, mine is, based on that when we take in a certain substance, with me it's flour and sugar, which basically...
So you have a common reaction.
Yes, craving and obsession. And...
the dynamics of the disease are the same, but the substance... that's involved is different.
Right, but how important is the
apparently
substance?
Pretty important.
Okay, but that's why I'm asking why. I mean, I would even go so far as to say, I mean, I'm not saying that cancer doctors should come into an AA meeting and talk about how their consciences, you know, they didn't. But I don't know that I agree with this part where it's talking about...
Well, you don't have to.
That if a cancer doctor doesn't follow his path and is self-seeking instead, that he's going to suffer because I think he's going to suffer in the same way that we suffer. He's going to be disconnected from God. And he's going to have the consequences of self-centeredness in his life. So I just, you know, I don't...
What happened to the Washingtonians?
But didn't they go in a different, totally different direction?
Yeah, they wanted to solve other problems than alcohol. They wanted to solve slavery. They wanted to solve women's rights.
Okay, but that's different. That's like in a different... ballpark.
I think it's about identification.
Well,
I think you couldn't identify with.
Oh, okay, you've made your point.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Kim, hopeful alcoholic. Along the lines of what that lady was saying, a couple of months ago, I was at a meeting in my home group, and it's part of a group. And a girl identified as an addict.
Yep.
And I stopped her. And I'd already discussed with people who know the tradition better than I do about this. I said, should I pull her aside? And they go, no. Stop her in the meeting. You pull her aside, you're making it personal. This is a meeting thing. And I stopped her, and she went, I said, this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it says in the format, only alcoholics can participate. And
so it's an open meeting?
An open meeting.
Got it.
The meeting exploded.
This is a very important issue.
Well,
No, wait. Let's not jump out. Let's have hands rather than anarchy.
So the meeting exploded. I'm the devil incarnate. I don't care if you identify as an alcoholic mass murderer. But if you're going to speak at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to hear the word alcoholic in your identification. So everybody went nuts, boom, boom, boom. They're going to take a vote on changing the format, this, that.
Well, see, that's the group conscience. That's very valid.
But as I say, it's a meeting in a larger group. They started calling their sponsors, and everybody told them the consequences of what they were about to do.
Yeah.
If they change the format to allow non-alcoholics to speak in the meeting, it's no longer a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. They are no longer part of the group.
Well, I don't know whether that's true or not.